You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Williams wants to fade. Stoops in the end zone for a touchdown.
Well, I gotta admit, it is weird to look at the Big 12 softball standings and not see Oklahoma at number one, but that's what we've got going on, and there is no reason, zero reason, no reason at all to panic over this or even have the slightest bit of concern. If you do look at the Big 12 standings, you got Oklahoma State number one and Oklahoma number two, and this is all done on percentage points. And when you look at the fact that the Cowgirls have played three more conference games than what the Sooners had, that kind of tells the story there. Oklahoma State at 11-1. Oklahoma fresh off a loss, ending their 40-game winning streak. A loss at Texas. The Sooners dropped to 8-1 in conference play on the season. And when you want to, like, Oklahoma State, they want to do this. You look on Twitter, you look on social media, there's some smoke there. They want to blow it. And so you could jump in here and you see Oklahoma State has a loss to Iowa State. They're 34-7 on the season. Oklahoma, again, the loss on Sunday to Texas, 38-1 on the season. And when you look at, I think when you look at what's lying ahead for Oklahoma State, there's absolutely, in my opinion, there's absolutely a reckoning coming. Oklahoma State's a good softball program. Don't get me wrong. They're one of the top three in the Big 12. I think clearly your top three programs in the Big 12 are Oklahoma, Texas, Oklahoma State. As to exactly what order they will fall in, that's yet to be determined. But at the order I think they're in, I mean, I got Oklahoma number one in this conference. And then it's kind of a toss-up between Oklahoma State and Texas. And when I say that there's a reckoning coming for Oklahoma State, they still have Texas this coming weekend, and then Oklahoma May 6th through the 8th on the schedule. So, I mean, look, you can talk the talk, but the time's going to come where you have to walk the walk, and those will be two really big series for Oklahoma State. If they're able to win those, they can brag. But until someone dethrones Oklahoma, I'm not going to buy into anything that says that Oklahoma's not the top team in the Big 12. Because by my count, I mean, nothing changes. And it's, you want to know how to tell if a team has dominated a conference to the fashion that Oklahoma has? Here's how you do it. The Sooners dropped one game in a series that they had already won. If you think about it, this loss to Texas, it's not even equivalent to Oklahoma's loss to Oklahoma State last year in the Bedlam series. Because at least when Oklahoma lost the Bedlam series, the series was still up in the air. I mean, it could have gone either way. You had to play that rubber match. But Oklahoma had won the first two games against Texas convincingly. They dropped the Sunday game by two runs. And you think, you know, there's this party in Austin. You know, we beat the Sooners. No, you didn't. The reality is you won a game, but you lost the series. And to see the reaction across the Big 12 about Oklahoma dropping one game in a series that they won, well, that says a lot. I was traveling in New York this last weekend, the weekend before Easter, and I got to go to Yankees Red Sox. You know, Red Sox lost the first two games of that series. They won the final game, the game I went to. Wasn't a lot of celebrating from the Red Sox because they won one game in the series with the Yankees. That's a, you know, it's a heated rivalry in baseball, and Oklahoma, Texas is, you know, it's a heated rivalry in anything. I mean, we've talked about this, basket weaving, you name it, it's a heated rivalry. And so, yeah, congratulate them for the Sunday win, but let's keep this whole thing in perspective because nothing changes. This does not remove Oklahoma from being the top team in the Big 12. This does not remove Oklahoma from being the top contender for the national championship. To, you know, everyone's still going to expect Oklahoma to be at the World Series. Everyone's still going to expect Oklahoma to host a regional and a super regional. Everyone's still going to expect Oklahoma not only to win the Big 12 regular season title, but to go and win the Big 12 tournament. I mean, literally nothing changes with this. But it is a loss, and you know, you got to move on. And I feel like in many ways, Patty Gasso tried to warn that this was coming. When you look at dissatisfaction, I think of the Sunday game against Baylor. You think about that Wichita State game, where Patty Gasso just kind of said, you know, we're better than. I mean, they're winning these games. But Patty Gasso kept nitpicking. I see this, and I see this, and I see this. And maybe that's what it takes. Maybe that's what it takes to get this team to fully buy into what Patty Gasso is saying. Because there is the possibility, you read your own clippings, there is the possibility you just kind of go out there with a ho-hum attitude, having already taken two games in this series and taken them convincingly. You go out and you sleepwalk through the Sunday afternoon. We'll find out Wednesday night, because Oklahoma still stays on the road. They're at North Texas on Wednesday night before coming home to host Iowa State over the weekend. But I want to go back to something that I brought up in the last podcast, and I just want to reiterate this, how impressive it is what Oklahoma is doing this season. Sooners are 38-1, 8-1 in conference play, and they're dominating in every facet of this sport. And I still don't know. I brought this up, and I still don't know the answer to it. What's more impressive with what they're doing? Is it more impressive what they're doing from the plate, or is it more impressive what they're doing from the field and in the circle? When you look at what they're doing from the plate, that they have a team batting average of .375, 347 RBIs this season, 105 home runs. Those are all tops in the Big 12. And then you go out to the field and you see, this team is every bit as dominant as what they are offensively. They 0.68 team ERA. They've only given up a total of 32 runs on the season. Only 21 of those 32 runs were earned runs. 336 strikeouts by this pitching staff that lost Gisel Juarez. That's number two. That puts them number two in the Big 12. They've given up the fewest home runs in the Big 12 at 6. You tell me, what's more impressive with what this team is doing? I feel like I'm sticking to my guns when I'm leaning towards, you know, we knew this team was going to be good offensively. When you have the home run leader, not just on the season, but when you have the all-time career home run leader in Jocelyn Alo, you know they're going to be good offensively. And when you look at this is just amazing, but when you look at the Big 12 standings as far as statistics, the top five batters in the Big 12 are for Oklahoma. Jocelyn Alo leads the way with a .490 batting average. Jada Coleman, .456. Riley Boone, .444. Taylor Snow, .427. And Grace Lyons at .425. And so when you look at those, all five of those girls are returning starters. And you knew, you absolutely knew they were coming back, and you knew they were good. And if you go back to the preseason, I was saying it, a lot of people were saying it, I didn't stand on this hill all by myself, talking about this team would break offensive records that they set just a year ago in 2021. And that's what they seem to be on pace to be doing. But you go out into the field and you look at the ladies in the circle, your top three pitchers from the Big 12 also with Oklahoma. Hope Trot won with just a ridiculous 0.11 ERA. Jordy Ball, 0.85. Nicole May, 0.91. And when you look at, you've got the top three pitchers in the Big 12, combined 38-1 record. Two of those pitchers were not with this team last year. Only Nicole May, 11-0 on the season. Only Nicole May was on this team last year. Jordy Ball, true freshman, 162 strikeouts this season. Number two in the Big 12. Hope Trotwine with North Texas last season, 105 strikeouts, 11-0 record. By the way, Jordy Ball, 16-1. So I think when you look at it from that perspective, to me, I think what they're doing from the field and in the pitching circle, that's probably more impressive than what they're doing behind the plate. But when you combine the two, there's no reason at all, to expect that this team won't not just compete for the Big 12 title, but win the Big 12 title again. Not just compete to get to the Women's College World Series, but actually be one more time at the Women's College World Series. Yeah, they lost the game. They lost the game in conference play. Yeah, they did that last year. You remember that? They also lost it. It was at Auburn last year, and they ended up winning it all. So there's no reason to panic at all if you're an Oklahoma softball fan. Hey, Spencer Rattler has some interesting things to say about the state of Oklahoma football. And I got to be honest with you, I don't know that I disagree with him.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So Spencer Rattler's wrapping up his first spring in Columbia, South Carolina, and he did an interview last week with, I believe it was ESPN, maybe Sports Illustrated, but I'm pretty confident it was ESPN. Anyway, he did this interview, and he in the interview, he described Oklahoma as being a toxic situation. Now, there's lots of ways to approach this. And I think the first way is to understand he described the situation, not the program, but the situation. And that situation was, I believe, his relationship with Lincoln Riley as it pertains to Caleb Williams. I think that was the situation that Spencer Rattler was talking about. And I think when you look at this at first, you're as an Oklahoma fan, you're like, whoa, pump the brakes here, okay? And then the defenses come up, and the first thing you want to say is, well, this is a guy who's upset, and he's still hurt, you know, over, you know, bent about losing a starting job to Caleb Williams, who was a true freshman, and all that, you know, all that can hold merit, and I think you can approach that line of thinking to a certain extent. But there's two undeniable things here that you just I don't think you can get around them. And probably there's three. But the two things that stand out is that clearly there was something different with Spencer Rattler. The Spencer Rattler that we saw in 2021 was not the same Spencer Rattler we saw in 2020. And we expected this kid to make this big step, you know, from 2020 to 2021. We thought he was going to just take, you know, this huge step. People were talking about, you know, Heisman Trophy front runner, NFL lock for the NFL draft, all these things. You remember we're talking about he's only a true sophomore, but I mean, a redshirt sophomore, but this could be the kind of season that propels him out of Norman and on into the NFL. And the truth is it absolutely was the kind of season that propelled him out of Norman, because it wasn't the same. There was something different about Spencer Rattler, and there was a disconnect with Spencer Rattler. Now, the question is, what was the heart of that disconnect? Was it his relationship with Lincoln Riley? Was it his pursuit of the NIL and all the distractions that come with it? Was it his, I mean, you got to throw this out there. Was it his arrogance and his ego? What was the source of the disconnect? Because there absolutely was a disconnect. You can't look at body language. You can't look at the way the team rallied to Caleb Williams and in ways that they didn't for Spencer Rattler. It was all different. So you can't deny that. You can't get around that. There was clearly something different with Spencer Rattler in 2021. But the second thing there also is that there was clearly something different with Lincoln Riley in 2021. That was a different Lincoln Riley than we had seen in years past. And there's no coach that is above criticism. As much as everybody, you know, the honeymoon is still going with Brent Venables, but I promise you this fall, even after Saturday, after the spring game, there's going to be criticism of Brent Venables. It will happen. It'll 100% happen. There's no coach that's above criticism. And so to criticize Lincoln Riley over playoff losses, to criticize Lincoln Riley over the Bedlam loss, to criticize Lincoln Riley over other things down the way, that's just part of that comes with the territory, right? It comes with the territory of being a fan. It comes with the territory of being a head coach at a program as prestigious as Oklahoma. It's just part of the deal. But all that said, it was a different Lincoln Riley in 2022 than the Lincoln Riley that we saw in 2021. And so something was up. Somewhere along the way, things got crossways. Now, I honestly believe, I mean, I think there's evidence. I think we can point to comments made not by Lincoln Riley, but Lincoln Riley's people, comments made not by USC, but by the people around that situation. I believe this thing with USC goes back to September. And I think that's probably, if you're looking for the root cause of what was going on, I think that's it right there. I think Caleb Williams was a product of the situation that was brought about by this whole Lincoln Riley being with one foot out the door, because Lincoln Riley didn't coach the same way. Spencer Rattler didn't play the same way. Caleb Williams was fresh and just kind of had enough I don't care mentality to him to jump in there and be a difference maker on this team. But all that said, you know, as fans, we can't have it both ways. And what I mean by that is we can't say Lincoln Riley burned this program. We can't say things like what I just said. Lincoln Riley's been talking to USC since September. We can't say that Lincoln Riley was trying to coach the Bedlam game in a way to lose so that he could just pack up and get out the door to California and not have to worry about the Big 12 championship game. And those are all things that Oklahoma's saying. Those are all things that are coming from the fan base. Actually, those are some things that have even come from a few players. And so you can't have that and then be mad at Spencer Rattler for saying he got out of a toxic situation. Because if you believe all those things about Lincoln Riley, if you believe he coached the Bedlam game to lose, if you believe that he's been talking to USC since September, if you believe that he, again, something else I believe Lincoln Riley, the whole thing that pushed us over the edge was the move to the SEC. I think Lincoln Riley's scared to death of the SEC. I think Lincoln Riley thought, man, I can go to the Pac-12 and I can be the big dog in the Pac-12. Then surprise, there's a new influx of coaches in the Pac-12 as well. And he's struggling in recruiting battles with Oregon right now. But all that said, if you're gonna hold to that line, which I hold to, then you have to agree with Spencer Rattler. You have to agree that this was a toxic situation. Now here's the exact comment from Spencer Rattler. He said he's talking about the decision to go on to South Carolina. He's talking about how he landed there and how, you know, Shane Beamer played a role in that because of his previous relationship with Beamer at OU. And really just kind of starting fresh in Columbia. Here's what he says. A lot of guys don't get another chance to start over where they really wanted, Rattler said. I was just happy to get away from a toxic situation and get somewhere new. And then listen to this. This is the stinger. He said, anywhere was going to be better, and I found the right place. So I think in this whole thing, bridges were burned. I really do. You know, Spencer Rattler was done the minute Caleb Williams replaced him at the Texas game. I'm on record. I said it in print. I said it on the podcast that unless OU was in the college football playoff, Spencer Rattler would not be with this program during the bowl game. And I was right. I mean, 100% right. Spencer Rattler was done at the Texas game. He was done with Lincoln Riley. And I really think the way he conducted himself through that whole situation probably made him done at Oklahoma in general, because there was again, we're talking about a disconnect, and the team did not rally to Spencer Rattler because of the way he approached that situation. And I get it. I mean, if I'm Spencer Rattler, I get it. You got a coach who's just not there. He's not 100% committed to the program at the time. You're thinking you're a Heisman front runner going into the season, and then you lose your starting job to a true freshman who seems to be a phenom, and then the team, you see the team rally to this kid, this true freshman, and you're just kind of left standing on the sideline by yourself. I mean, it all creates the perfect storm that would be a toxic situation to Spencer Rattler. Now, again, I think the key component here, if you're an Oklahoma fan, the key component is that he described it as a toxic situation, meaning everything we've just discussed for the last 9.5 minutes. Not a toxic program. And now, you know, you can't help but wonder what it would be like had he stayed under Brent Venables. But again, I think Oklahoma fans are going to be very pleased with what we have in Dillon Gabriel running this offense. And we get a preview of that this Saturday with the spring game.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Well, all right, Oklahoma's red-white game is on Saturday. This is this annual spring game that will wrap up spring practice. Baker Mayfield having his statue unveiled finally in Norman. It's a long time coming, well overdue because of the COVID pandemic. I thought a kind of a fun way to preview the red-white game would be to break down, kind of prioritize offense and defense. Like where are you most confident in? If you're going to break down, for example, offensive positions, quarterback, running back, offensive line, you know, wide receiver, if you're going to break all of that down, where are you most confident in and what are you least confident in? Where do you want to see improvement? Where do you think the more important and more intriguing, you know, position battles are, so forth? And so I'm going to break it down that way and let you know. With the offensive, I think you got four positions: quarterback, wide receiver, running back, offensive line. And we'll start with quarterback because I feel like I'm more confident in Oklahoma at quarterback than your average guy or gal. Maybe not. I don't know. But you know, Dillon Gabriel coming on campus, I think we were so enamored with Caleb Williams and the potential that was there. We were so, you know, just disgruntled, if you will, over the loss of Caleb Williams into the transfer portal that we overlooked just how good of a college career Dillon Gabriel has had to this point and the true impact he can make as a transfer quarterback at the University of Oklahoma. I think that was just kind of way overlooked. But I'm completely confident at Oklahoma at the quarterback position. Now, Dylan Gabriel has an injury like he did last year for Central Florida and he can't play, then you got a bunch of question marks. But I think that's where you look at the quarterback on Saturday. When you look at this quarterback battle, you're not really looking at at number one. We've talked about this on the Sooner Nation podcast before. The battle is really number two. And I think it's going to come down between Micah Bowens and Nick Evers. I really think, I hinted to this on my last podcast I recorded. I think Micah Bowens is going to make a push because of his athleticism. Maybe he's the sleeper in this whole situation. Obviously, Nick Evers is the guy. You know, he's the first, you know, the first quarterback recruit, the first overall commitment under Jeff Lebby. So there's a lot of love there. And it's, I mean, it's all earned. I mean, it's not like anybody's giving anything to Nick Evers. But I want to watch that battle. The athleticism, the maturity, the experience of Micah Bowens versus just the raw talent of Nick Evers. That's what I'm going to be watching. I don't think we're going to learn a lot about Dylan Gabriel. I think the only way this goes south with Dylan Gabriel, if he goes out there and just constantly turns the ball over, it doesn't look like he's got a control of things. And I don't know that that's going to happen, because I just don't think we're going to see a lot from this offense. I think it's going to be a lot of learning, a lot of just making sure the guys know how to line up in this offense. That's just my opinion on that. So I'm most confident on the offensive side of the ball in the quarterback position. I think secondly, I'm most confident in the wide receiver position. Now this is a group that you know, you lost Mario Williams, you lost Michael Woods, you lost Jaden Hazelwood, but there's so much depth and so much talent at this receiver position. I mean, you got guys, you know, obviously Marvin Mims, I think he's going to be a star. And I always say whenever you start with Oklahoma's receivers, you start right there. But Jaleel Farouk showed, you know, he flashed his talent in the Alamo Bowl. I think Drake Stoops is so underrated for how good he really is. Theo Weiss, Cody Jackson. I mean, this is a deep, deep unit. And so I don't know that you really got to worry about it. I would love to see Jaden Hazelwood in Jeff Lebby's offense. I think Mario Williams would star in Jeff Lebby's offense. But just because they're not here doesn't mean that this offense can't thrive and it can't succeed, because they're deep and they're talented still with those three guys gone. And so I don't know that I got any concerns there. And same thing with the running back. It's interesting because I want to see Gavin Salchek. I want to see Javonte Barnes. I want to see how they look at the college level, because these guys were stars at the prep level. I mean, men amongst boys at the prep level. But now you go to college, everybody on your team was a star at the prep level. What do they look like with this type of game speed? How can they read, if you do like a zone read, how do you read that defensive end? The quarterback has to read the defensive end, but so does the running back. So how do they adjust to that? How do they adjust to blocking schemes? Just what do they look like? I don't know, honestly, how much of a role that these guys are going to have this fall. I'm not saying they won't see the field. I'm not saying they won't have an impact. What I'm saying is I don't know. Because I think you're going into the, I think you went into the spring, and I think you're going to exit the spring with Eric Gray and Marcus Major, clearly your number one and your number two at the running back position. And I mean, do you need more than that? I mean, obviously you got to have a third guy because you need depth, right? But you think back to some of the great offenses that Oklahoma has had, and it's a two running back system. And you know, you could go way back to Kewan Jones and Adrian Peterson. If you wanted to, you could go way back. But I don't know that you have to, because there's even more recent, you know, Joe Mixon, Samaje Perine. Just the point I'm making is, I think two is what you need, and then you need to develop. And so how much can Javonte Barnes, how much can Gavin Salchek develop this year and be really ready to go next year? Because there's the potential, I would think, there's the potential that this is it. This is the last rodeo for Eric Gray and Marcus Major. So the area that I guess the area that I have the most question marks, I don't really know that concern is the right adjective here, but the question marks, is that on the offensive line, because it's no secret Marquise Hayes is gone. Tyrese Robinson gone. Those guys are hoping to hear their name called to hear in a week or so in the NFL draft. And so those guys are gone. You've got three solid guys that I believe are already locked in at starting positions. I think left tackle is going to belong to Anton Harrison. I think Andrew Rame has the center position. Right guard, you're going to see Chris Murray. But then you've got three guys that you just kind of wonder, how do they fit? Like Wanya Morris, how does he fit in this offense? Savion Byrd, how does he fit in this offense? You got the Cal transfer, the Matuire, you know how I am with names, but McCade Matuire is what we're going to call him until I hear Toby say it on Saturday and correct me on it. But the point I'm saying is that if you got three guys, if you got Anton Harrison, Andrew Rame, Chris Murray, if you got those three guys locked into starting positions, you only have two more positions. And you've got at least three guys, and I honestly think you can go deeper than that. But I think there's three guys there that are really going to compete for two positions. And I don't know. I mean, there's so much potential there, right? How much did we hear about Wanya Morris's potential? How much have we talked about Savion Byrd? These guys have been on campus for a long time, but it's time to thrive, or it's time to let someone else have the spot. And so when you look at Saturday's a glorified scrimmage, is it not? The idea that this is going to be a competitive game, well, it's competitive just in the spirit of friendship, you know, that whole family team orientation type thing. But there, at the end of the day, it's a glorified scrimmage. What I'm looking at from the offensive line, when you look at these guys, you want to see them play clean. And what I mean by that is you don't want to see them jump off sides. You don't want to see them hold. You don't want to see them, you know, blow an assignment on a zone blocking scheme. You want to see them play clean. You want to see them have a little bit of dominance. And you want to see them get to that second level of the defense. And I think any combination of five guys who can do that regularly and with consistency, I think that's what Bill Beatenbow is looking for. Don't forget, this is a unit that last year gave up 33 quarterback sacks. And that's the most Oklahoma's offensive line has allowed since, I'm pretty sure it's a 2015 season. So it's the most sacks in 6 years is what this offensive line gave up last season. So there's talent there, but there's certainly more room for improvement. All right, well, if you flip sides of the ball, you know, you got three units there, defensive line, defensive backs, linebackers. I think, again, if we're ranking them in a level of confidence, one, two, and three, I think you got to start out with linebackers as your most confident group. You know, you're led by Deshaun White, David Agwebu, Danny Stutzman, Shane Whittier. I think those top three are probably your starters. I think you're probably, you know, strong side linebacker, David Agwebu, weak side linebacker, Danny Stutzman, middle linebacker, Deshaun White. I really feel like that's probably the way it's heading for. And they're all guys that are seasoned. They're all guys that are experienced. And man, again, Danny Stutzman is just one of those guys that you can't wait to see the fruition of his potential, if that makes sense, what I'm saying. It's kind of like, you know, Ethan Downs on the defensive line. Just a guy who was a flash last year as a true freshman. But there's just a reckless abandon that Danny Stutzman plays with that just lets you know that this is a kid who has the potential, shows the physical traits, and has that bulldog mentality to be one other guy in a long list of all-American quality NFL caliber linebackers that this university has produced. And I think there's nothing from Stutzman that would make you think that it's not there. But I think those are your three starters, Deshaun White, David Agwebu, Danny Stutzman. I think they're set at that. I think what they're going to do through the spring and through the summer is they're going to build depth and experience around those guys. You saw Danny Stutzman deal with an injury as a true freshman last year. I mean, the old saying, you know, you're always just one snap away, right, from being a starter. So you're going to see, I think, a lot of developmental type stuff on Saturday with these guys that are not going to be starters. And that's a good way to find out who your starters are, because typically the guys that you've got penciled in as a starter, they play the fewest minutes in these type of environments. And so it wouldn't even surprise me to see a guy like David Igwebu not play hardly at all, just because you know what you've got in him. But then again, it is a new system and a new linebacker coach, a new defensive coordinator, all that stuff where guys got to go out and prove themselves and show that they're understanding where they're supposed to be in various alignments. But again, at the end of the day, this whole spring and this game on Saturday, it's all about development. And so I think you see probably some other guys come up behind these three. And again, I'm completely confident at this position. I think the second position that I'm really confident at is on the defensive line. And similar to the wide receiver position, you lost a lot. Isaiah Thomas, Perrion Winfrey, Nick Benito, these guys are gone. Brian Asamoah, depending on where you qualify him as a position player, is he a defensive lineman? Is he a linebacker? He's that hybrid. But still, there's so much talent here. You got, I think Jalen Redmond, this is the year. I mean, again, a guy what has he done? He's dealt with injury. He's dealt with illness. He's set out for COVID. But the guy's just raw. I mean, every time he takes the field, you think this guy is a guy who possesses that raw talent that's being harnessed, but hasn't yet been shaped or molded. And is this the year? It has to be. I mean, the truth is it has to be for Jalen Redmond. And then you think of the guys that transferred in, you know, Jeffrey Johnson from Tulane. I'm going to mess this up again, but Jonah Laulu from Hawaii. Those guys are going to be have a say. You know, I think they probably get a lot of time on Saturday because they're trying to figure out where do they fit in this rotation, because you have guys like Jordan Kelly, guys like Josh Ellison, Marcus Stripling, Reggie Grimes. You know, these are guys that are all finding their way. And I think the one guy that's settled, the one guy that you know has a spot is Isaiah Coe. Now, how are they going to put a Jordan Kelly with Isaiah Coe? How are they going to put a Jalen Redmond with Isaiah Coe? Where does Marcus Stripling, you know, where does Reggie Grimes, where do they all fit in? And that's where you start putting the pieces together, but the pieces are definitely there. And I think probably not on the same par as the linebacker core, but these guys are there. I think the coaches have a grasp of who they want to be where, who's going to be a depth guy, who's going to be a starter guy, who's going to be your biggest impact player. I think all of that is there, just lined out for these coaches. And we'll see some of it come together on Saturday. But again, I say it again, it's glorified scrimmage. So there's not a lot that you're going to see that you're going to walk away with going, oh yeah, this is absolutely solid on this defensive line. This is what we're going to see first game of the first weekend in September. I think the biggest question mark, the least confidence that you would have would be in this defensive secondary, because you've had inconsistency at the cornerback spots. You lost Pat Fields. You lost Delarian Turner-Yell. This is a secondary that was seventh in the Big 12 in defensive pass efficiency. The quarterbacks completed 65.8, almost 66% of their passes against this defense. And you've got some of the usual suspects, right? DJ Graham, Woody Washington, Jaden Davis. They're all there. I mean, same guys. And I've said this about other teams, and it's true about your own team, that if you're struggling and you're returning the same guys that were struggling, that's not necessarily a good thing. Now, maybe philosophy, maybe execution, maybe alignments with the new coaching staff, it always can work wonders and help guys transform and change. But so can an influx of new talent. And that's what they got. And you got three transfers on the defensive side of the ball that aren't, I don't think they're here just for depth. And if they end up being just guys that add depth, that's okay. But I think the you. I mean, it's not. There's no. It's not a coincidence. Two of your three transfers in the offseason were at the cornerback position. C.J. Colden and Connie Walker. Those guys came in to compete. Those guys came in to push. Those guys came in to send a message from this coaching staff that, hey, we've broken down the film. We've seen what you guys are capable of, but we've also seen what you guys have done. And so we're going to bring some other guys in here, and they're either going to push you to be better or they're going to replace you. And, I mean, raise your hand if you know how this is going to shape up. Because I think what's maybe in this defensive secondary, what's in our mind right now and what could be in our mind at the end of this scrimmage on Saturday are two different things. And then, I mean, I think, honestly, here's the truth about this defensive secondary. I think Key Lawrence is probably the only guy. At this point, I think Key Lawrence is probably the only guy who's got a starting position lined up at safety. What do you do with Billy Bowman? What do you do with Justin Broyles? They're not going to do the nickelback in the capacity of what we've seen the last few seasons under Alex Grinch. So, I mean, what is that going to look like? Truthfully, just the positions of the secondary. How are they going to play that out? So there's a lot there. There's a lot of question marks there. And I think the defensive secondary is the one position on this defense where there are more questions than there are answers. Just, I mean, that's just the truth. That's where it is. And there's talent there. I mean, Billy Bowman is a young talent. He's got to find a spot, though. We saw DJ Graham. I mean, everyone's going to, forever, he's going to be identified with that interception against Nebraska last year. But there were other plays from DJ Graham that weren't great. Jaden Davis seems to have regressed from his freshman season. Woody Washington just doesn't seem back to form yet. So this is the position. I mean, if you're looking for a position on the defense that Saturday, how it goes on Saturday will probably have an impact on the fall. Maybe of all of the positions, offense and defense, the defensive secondary, probably the greatest position battle of all. Because I just don't know. I mean, raise your hand if you know. I don't think anybody knows at this point. And so, therefore, I think a lot of eyes should probably be on the defensive secondary. Special teams, I'm not really going to throw that out here right now because special teams will be the very last thing, the very last thing that they wrap up in August. Who's going to return punts? Who's going to return kickoffs? Yeah, they have an idea. And we'll see some guys out there on Saturday in a mock-type situation. They're not – I don't believe they're really going to return a kickoff. I don't believe they're really going to return a punt. But when that goes live, that'll be one of the very last things they do in fall camp. So we'll just have to put a pin in that, so to speak, until August. All right, that's it for this episode of the Sooner Nation podcast. Thunder season is over with, so we're basically spring sports and football heading into the summer. Heartland-sports.com is where you can find us. We're on Twitter at Sports Heartland. Look forward to seeing you there. Always drop a line, drop a note. We'd love to have you participate in the podcast. And I hope you had a great Easter. I hope you have a fantastic week. Boomer Sooner, everybody.